Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Mike Tenenbaum will join us at 11:30 with the draft. Just 2 weeks and 2 days away. A lot going on. We'll hear from Todd McShay in a matter of moments as well. Let's take a quick phone call, and then we'll get to the NFL. Doug in Huntington. Doug, you're next up on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's actually Dove. How you doing this morning?
What's up, Dove?
Oh, nothing much. I wanted to call. I really don't want to be a wet blanket. And I say this admittedly saying I miss sports every ounce as you guys, you know. This feels so rushed to me. You know, I mean, we're talking about how in 2 weeks and 2 days, we can't even have an NFL draft in one location. And all of a sudden, baseball's starting to talk about having games, you know, albeit in one location. I just feel like this is like the Knicks attempting a rebuild. It's, you know, we say we want to strip it down and we're going to deal with the losses and deal with, you know, the pain. But as soon as we start losing games, as soon as we don't have sports for 3 weeks, guys, all of a sudden we're saying we're losing our minds. We can't take it anymore. We need to figure something out. I think we need to R-E-L-A-X, relax. And we all need to have some perspective, because if it doesn't make sense, it makes dollars. And I think this is the owners of baseball wanted to make some dollars. I think they're missing their money. That's personally what I think. And I think we need to slow down.
I don't think you're wrong, but I mean, this is what's going on right now. I mean, Adam Silver can sit there and say that, you know, they'll wait till May before, you know, they have anything else to say. But I mean, that doesn't mean they're going to stop trying to make up, you know, contingency plans and everything else to try to get their season going. You're right. I mean, it does come down to money, but I mean, we all realize that. Everyone understands that. But, I mean, they have to find a way. They're looking to find a way. No one's going to – I mean, if it's not safe in May, then they'll wait. I mean, this is what these leagues are doing right now behind closed doors with conversations, trying to find ways to get their seasons going.
But let's not just frame it as the sports leagues trying to do that, these greedy owners. I mean, you have the president of the United States talking about our country getting back to work, talking about our economy getting back started again because we weren't designed to be shut down for an extended period of time. So if he's talking about various industries getting back to work, why would the sports industry be separate and apart from that? That's the part of it that doesn't make any sense. It's not like we're just talking about the sports industry, but we are a sports show, so that's what we focus on. The president of the United States is talking about getting everybody back to work sooner rather than later.
Yeah. I mean, he talked on Saturday about how we're going to have 80,000 people at football games in August and September. So this is not just the sports leagues are trying to push forward. This is, it almost feels like a mandate or a strong suggestion from the top and from the leaders of this country, doesn't it, Rick?
Yeah, it does. And the fact that, I mean, part of Jeff Passan's report was that they have the backing, I mean, so far from, you know, and I know the MLB kind of disputes this, but I would imagine what Jeff Passan is reporting is probably pretty close to the truth. I mean, I think that there's, outside of just the owners and the players who aren't going to get paid if there's no season, I mean, there is, I mean, hell, we're sitting here, I'm sitting here, you know, watching NBA players playing with, you know, different teams, NBA 2K tournaments, and they're just sitting there in front of a TV screen, and I'm actually watching it. I mean, people have watched that. I don't know. You can have an opinion one way or the other. My opinion is I would like to see, I don't care if it's baseball, NHL, NBA, gets, as long as it's safe and no one is being put at risk, I would like to see them find a way to get this thing going.
And for me, Rick, I think that's what it comes down to. As long as the public health officials are saying that you're not putting athletes or support staff at an unreasonable risk, then I'm all for them getting back to playing these games. I really am. I think that's the bottom line approach. As long as the public health care officials and the medical professionals say that we're at a point with this virus where we've gotten to the other side of it, where we've passed the apex, and that it doesn't represent any unreasonable risk for these athletes to try to play these games in a controlled environment with no fans or spectators, then I'm okay with that. I don't think that anybody should have a real problem with it.
What they cannot have happen is start and then have to stop, because that will push it back months and months and months. So you're right. I mean, as desperate as we are for these sports, they need to figure out a way where they can do it and do it safely. Because if they don't do it properly, this will be something that you feel for a very long time. I mean, if it's not done properly, you know, late May, early June, and it breaks out in this little bubble of baseball, every sport's going to be pushed off for months and months and months.
Yeah, and I know the one thing I didn't agree with in that call is the fact that he feels like this is being rushed. I mean, listen, just because you have a report now of, you know, potentially what could happen, it doesn't mean that it's, first of all, set in stone, and the time frame isn't set in stone, and there are still, you know, thousands of different things that need to be sorted out before this actually happens. It's not like all of a sudden now in 2 weeks this is going to happen. I mean, there's plenty of things. I mean, plenty of things that need to be talked about and figured out before we get to a point where you're going to see baseball players in Arizona.
Yeah, the logistics are unbelievable. All right, 800-919-3776. Too early for some food for you? Are you ready?
No, I'm always ready.
All right, in these trying times, it's important to remember we pulled together as a community. Small businesses all over are going to be feeling the lasting effects of this pandemic. If you are a small business trying to get the word out that you're still serving the community, let us know. Send an email to 987ESPN@gmail.com and let us know your story so we can pass the word along to our community. Like, you tell me, you guys in the mood for a little Italian right now or some deli?
Let's go deli.
Deli. The original John's Deli, open and serving Brooklyn since 1968. Original John's Deli, located at 2033 Stillwell Avenue. They're proud to have the reputation for the best hero in Brooklyn. Give them a call for pickup or delivery at 718-372-7481. If you could go one sandwich right now, not your favorite ever, right now, one sandwich placed in front of you, Rick, yours would be?
I would go with a breakfast sandwich.
A breakfast sandwich?
I would go with right now at this moment, 11:09-ish, I would go breakfast sandwich, yeah. A little salt, pepper, some ketchup.
Now you say, so you're going, what, egg and cheese with some ham, with some bacon? What's your...
I'll probably go sausage, egg, and cheese.
Sausage, egg, and
with some ketchup.
Cheese.
Yeah. Okay. Sausage, egg, and cheese with some ketchup.
Chris, what would your sandwich be?
I'm going to go the same thing, but I'm going to add bacon to it as well. So it would be sausage, bacon, egg, and cheese.
Sausage, bacon, egg, and cheese.
Yeah, because bacon makes everything better, Dave.
Everything better.
Yeah, I don't trust anybody that doesn't like bacon.
So would you wouldn't want to go out for dinner with someone that didn't like bacon?
No, I didn't say I wouldn't go out to dinner. I just said I don't
trust
people that don't like bacon. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, that wouldn't be someone that Chris would say, you know, you put it on your credit card and I'll give you the cash, because he wouldn't trust it.
Absolutely not.
Right.
Absolutely not.
No. I don't think, if you don't like bacon, something's wrong.
Yeah.
Because bacon is unbelievable. All right. Let's get into the NFL. Todd McShay, I don't know if you guys heard him on the K Show yesterday. He talked about the potential of Miami moving up to one. A lot of interesting things he got into. He was asked about Trevor Lawrence. He's like, oh, guys, he is the slam dunk of all slam dunks. There is absolutely no doubt that he's the number one pick and is going to be sensational at the NFL level. But he also got into the locals, the Jets and the Giants. Let's start with the Giants. Here is Todd McShay giving his analysis of Big Blue in the draft.
I think so. I think, what was it, Carl Banks is the last time they spent a first-round pick on a linebacker, but what does that matter? That's the thing with Simmons. And listen, he's not completely developed yet. He can get a little bit better at his recognition skills versus the run and taking on blocks. But this guy is everything you want if you're a defensive coordinator in the NFL right now. Because what the problem is, you're starting to see more and more teams offensively going to the no huddle and tempo and trying to force you to stay on the field with your personnel, right? So if you have a linebacker who can play in the slot, who can cover a tight end if you flex that tight end out, who can cover a big wide receiver, who can play the single high safety spot on occasion if you're stuck in that kind of personnel grouping. And if you watch the Ohio State game, the interception he makes where he goes 30-plus yards and goes over and plucks it like a corner, you don't find many guys like that at 6'3", 240, running the speed that he runs. So I think Simmons, again, while not completely developed, is so intriguing to a lot of teams because of today's NFL and what you're trying to combat defensively against these new school offenses.
Now, Chris, I know that you've been a proponent of the Giants going offensive line. If they did go Simmons fourth overall 2 weeks from Thursday, your take on that would be what?
My take on that would be the Giants are transitioning from an odd front defense to a four down look. I mean, you would have to. I mean, you heard it right there with Todd McShay. He said he's got to be ready in his recognition in terms of the run game, being able to stack and shed blockers. Like, those are all things that odd front middle linebackers have to deal with. And if he's going to play inside linebacker in the National Football League, he's going to have to be covered up by two defensive tackles. So to me, if you're going to go that direction and draft Isaiah Simmons, you're going to have to build a scheme around him. Kind of like what you saw with the Chicago Bears once upon a time when they drafted Brian Urlacher, who was a safety out of New Mexico. Like, they built the scheme around him and they protected him with defensive tackles that were disruptive and commanded double teams. You're going to have to do the same thing with Isaiah Simmons. Otherwise, it's probably not going to be a fit for the Giants. You know, you start talking about a guy that fits today's positionless football. Yeah, Isaiah Simmons is great for sub packages when you talk about nickel and dime defenses. But the toughest part about it is, where is he going to fit in your base defense? And that's why I think if you're going to draft a guy like this, then you want him to be on the field every single down. And that means he's going to have to play some first and second down in base. And I don't know that the Giants are employing a scheme right now defensively that fits his skill set.
Yeah, you want to know what position is not positionless? Is offensive tackle. I mean, isn't part of building your team, too, dependent on your division? I mean, didn't that go into it? I mean, the best way to make the playoffs is to win your division, correct?
Yes.
All right, so look at the teams you're playing against in your division. Look at the defensive line once they add Chase Young of the Washington Redskins.
Yeah, it's scary.
Look at the Cowboys' defensive line.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the Eagles' defensive line. You think you have adequate – you think at this moment right now
– no.
You have adequate protection for your second-year quarterback in Saquon Barkley?
No. In fact, not only do I think you don't, I know you don't. I mean, Nate
Solder, why is it a question?
A disaster.
So why is it a question? Your GM's in the hot seat. So, I mean, best-case scenario is you don't have this opportunity to draft in the top five ever again, right? Like, you have a decent season and you're more middle of the pack. You have the opportunity to draft the best available offensive lineman, and you need offensive line help. Why wouldn't you take advantage of that?
Yeah, I think we're all in agreement that's the way that you go if you're the Giants.
But to further your point, Rick, think about this. If you talk about the defense and all the holes that you have to fill on that side of the ball, what keeps your defense from being exposed is your offense being able to control time of possession. If you add an offensive lineman and improve that group up front, that makes Saquon Barkley better, that makes Daniel Jones better, and all of a sudden now your offense has the makings of being able to control the complexion of the game. And that's going to make your defense a whole hell of a lot better. So to me, it just makes sense to go with the offensive side of the ball to continue to complete that unit, because that's where you have the majority of your young, talented players. It's on that side of the ball.
Yeah, I just don't know how. I mean, Isaiah Simmons is great. I mean, I don't dispute that. I mean, he is a physical specimen. I mean, you've seen plenty of tape of him at Clemson being, I mean, as disruptive as it comes. But, mm-hmm. I mean, you're still supported by a lot of talent when you play for Clemson. Who on the Giants? I mean, you name the playmaker on the defensive side of the ball that's going to help support Isaiah Simmons over the next couple of years.
I mean, right now you're just hoping, Rick. You're hoping
exactly
that it's
right.
going to be Dexter Lawrence. You're hoping that it's going to be Jabril Peppers. You're hoping that James Bradbury can be a veteran presence that can help steady that unit. But right now it's a bunch of hope. You don't have any proof. You don't have anything that's definitive to hang your hat on. That side of the ball has no identity. Your offense already has an identity. It's Saquon Barkley. And then your young quarterback being able to develop. That's the identity of your team. So continue to build on that.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the other thing, though, too. I mean, you may think at the moment, like when you look at the offensive line, it's okay. It definitely needs an upgrade. But why wait until it's too late? Like, why wait until all of a sudden Nate Solder, you can't play him at left tackle? Like, why not use the opportunity now to get someone that, you know, can be the replacement at some point for Nate Solder?
Yeah, and I actually had the thought of, you'd go one and two. Like, you take a left tackle with the fourth overall pick, and then you take the center out of Michigan.
Ruiz or Cushenberry, one of those guys.
And then you turn your – because if your offensive line is good, and I think you have the potential to do that in this draft, you got a terrific running back. I think you might have a terrific quarterback. You've got good enough receivers. You have a tight end when healthy that's clearly a mismatch nightmare for other teams. Like, you have a potential to really put a good offense together out there if you're the Giants this coming season and beyond and for years to come.
Absolutely. Well, here's the other thing though, too, Dave and Chris, is it, I mean, depending on what happens with Christian McCaffrey, I mean, you're going to have to, after this upcoming season, you're going to have to pay Saquon Barkley. Right? I mean, you're going to have to, if Christian McCaffrey gets an extension this offseason, you're going to have to, after this season, you're going to have to pay Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, I don't think it matters whether McCaffrey gets an extension or not, because Ezekiel Elliott got paid after his third year.
No, I know, but I mean, what you've seen with running backs is maybe there's a pullback, but if Christian McCaffrey gets paid, Saquon Barkley is going to get paid.
I mean, to me, you can stop it with Saquon Barkley is going to get paid. Just because of
what happened. He'll get paid.
Yeah, he's going to get paid. Whether Christian McCaffrey gets his money from Carolina or not, I think he will, to your point, but whether or not he gets paid, Saquon Barkley is going to demand that you pay him after this upcoming season.
Okay, so if that's the case and you're not going to lose Saquon Barkley because you took him with the second overall pick,
there's no way
you're going to take it. Okay, then I'm going to want as much production as possible for the money I'm paying my running back.
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't only go one offensive line. I'd go two. I'd make the offensive line a strength because your guards are good. I can draft a staple left tackle and the best center out there. I can change the entire complexion of this offense in one night.
And more importantly, Dave, you're talking about three of your starting offensive linemen moving forward being younger than the age of 25. That, to me, that's the part that's appealing about it, because you've got a young quarterback and you've got a young running back. So you want to have the nucleus of what your offensive line is going to be in place for years to come, because we all know that that position group, more so than any other position group, relies on chemistry in order to produce at the highest level.
All right, more from Todd McShay on the Jets. Here he is discussing gangrene.
The Jets should be in a good situation. They want quarterbacks to go, as most teams do. They want Burrow to go. They want Tua to go. They want Jordan Love and Justin Herbert to go. I think Joe Douglas would love to be sitting there at 11 and looking at Jerry Jeudy, the best wide receiver in the class, and two or three of the top offensive tackles still on the board. To me, whether it's Tristan Wirfs from Iowa, I like Jedrick Wills a lot from Alabama, any one of those tackles. You got Mekhi Becton, who's 363 pounds and ran a 5.10 in the 40-yard dash. He's a freak out of Louisville. So there's a lot of talent at offensive tackle and at wide receiver. So knowing those guys, like, it wouldn't even surprise me if they moved back a little bit and took advantage of a team that was freaking out and trying to move up and go get a player that they wanted at that spot. Because with four offensive tackles and five wide receivers that all belong in the first round, if you can move back just a few spots and get an extra pick or two and still get basically the same player, why wouldn't you? They'll sit tight. They won't move up, is my guess, and they will they'll wind up drafting the best player available, if not moving back and still getting that same player with an extra pick or two.
Yeah, I would get nervous moving back, because we talk about the offensive linemen, and I don't know how many of them will be there at 13, 14, 15, but I do think the Jets are in a good position, Rick.
No, I think the Jets are in a great position, and it'll depend. I don't necessarily love, and again, we don't know what their boards look like and how these players are ranked on their draft boards, but I mean, I don't necessarily love the idea of moving back and taking, you know, the third or fourth best wide receiver if I'm sitting at 11 and can take the best wide receiver.
Yeah, I don't love that idea either. I don't. Because I do think there's a separation. Even though this is a really talented wide receiver group, I do think there is a separation between the top two players in this class versus the rest of the guys. I know some people have it at three, but to me it's CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jeudy, then it's everybody else.
Yeah, but it sounds like, without a doubt, you can get one of those two guys at 11. Like, if you're the Jets, you can get Jeudy. You probably have your pick and get the top overall wide receiver in a deep wide receiver draft. That, to me, would be the way to go. Or the best lineman that you have rated overall at 11. I don't know. I get nervous about moving back if I was the Jets in this draft.
Yeah, I would get nervous about it, too, but I think it's all contingent on how you set your board, right, and how these offensive linemen come off. Because if the Giants take an offensive lineman at 4 and then the Cardinals take an offensive lineman at 8, you know, no telling what the Cleveland Browns could potentially do at 10. You're talking about not having, you know, the top two or the top three guys on the offensive line position available when you pick at 11. So to me, at that point, it makes it more of a no-brainer.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what happens, too. I mean, with all these reports coming and who knows where, I mean, where the reports are coming from. I mean, who's leaking these reports or whatever else. But, I mean, one of the needs for Dallas in this upcoming draft, you could make the argument that it is safety. So if all of a sudden they circle back and they offer you a first-round pick for Jamal Adams, multiple picks, a first-rounder, so whatever it ends up being. I mean, they have the 17th overall pick. So, I mean, that I wouldn't be surprised if you see more trades happen before the actual day of the draft than you would normally. Just because
it's
going
to be so
of
clunky to make trades the night of, probably.
Yeah, I mean, if you're on the clock all of a sudden, you need to try to make trades. I got a GM saying that his kid's going to be answering the phone, and who knows what his wife's going to be.
Darren, do me a favor. Call the league office. Tell them we've done this.
Now, can you imagine if you picked up the phone and, like, this is your job? I mean, this is, I mean, you're getting paid millions of dollars to be a GM, and you have, you know, whatever it is left on the clock, and you try to make a deal with the Chargers, and you call, and the Tom Telesco's son picks up the phone. Can I help you? Hello? Yeah, I'm looking for your dad.
Yes,
that's dad. Funny.
Is dad home, please?
That's funny. But you know what, Rick, and talking about that a little bit further, and I'd be interested to get Mike T's take on this at 11:30, but a lot of the general managers and the front office people, they go through these draft simulations where they have mocks, and they talk about what potential trades could be out there, and they discuss ahead of time with other teams these scenarios that could play out. So maybe you see them try to put the structure in place for potential deals that could come about based on where they're at the night of the draft. So I think that it does add a degree of difficulty on executing a draft day trade, but I don't think it's something that these general managers can't overcome in terms of being able to actually facilitate that when we get to the draft.
All right. Now, there are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, your nose, your mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and 98.7 ESPN New York. Don't you always feel, Rick, like we could talk to him for an hour? Like there's, I always feel when we say, all right, thanks so much for the time, Mike, we'll talk to you next week, that there's 15 more questions that I could have.
Yeah, I think that's the beauty of most of our guests is that, I mean, I would do segments. I know we get yelled at, like wrap it up, but I mean, we could easily, especially with the timing of this, we could do 2-3 segments with Mike.
Easily 2-3 segments. All right, Santhi, we have Mike on the line. Yes? All right, let's bring him in. We were just waxing poetic about how good of a guest you are, Mike, and Mike Tenenbaum joins us here on 98.7 ESPN. Good morning, buddy.
Hey, great to be with you guys, and you're my favorite host, so it's, you know, a very complimentary relationship to one another.
Yeah, it's the yin and the yang, baby. All right, let's get right to it. So we've heard rumblings, and I don't know how legitimate they are, that the Dolphins love Joe Burrow and are considering making a big offer to move up to one and get that spot from Cincinnati. Is there any belief in your mind that that can potentially happen?
You know, ordinarily I would say yes, given the fact that if what you're saying is true, certainly Miami has a lot of ammo, but just knowing Mike Brown and his proclivities of how he operates things, he's a very set in his ways sort of gentleman. And once he makes his mind up, I've made some moves with him and certainly has had, you know, try to make some trades. So if, and I'm being presumptuous here, guys, but if I'm Cincinnati, I'm taking Joe Burrow. He's from Ohio, and I just can't imagine that anything's going to change his mind.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that, especially, I mean, with the financial aspect, too, what Joe Burrow would bring to that team as far as, you know, selling jerseys and everything else. Mike T, with what's going on with Tua, the fact that you can't get your hands on him, you haven't, you know, had a chance to see him have his pro day and everything else, I know you had said this earlier, and I think this was the feeling from a lot of people, that the draft would start at 3, that maybe you'd see Miami move up to 3 or the Chargers move up to 3. The closer we get to this, do you have the feeling now that maybe Miami just stays pat at 5 and you don't see anyone trade up to 3 to try to get Tua?
Yeah, I'll say this, Rick. There was a really interesting article yesterday by Albert Breer in SportsIllustrated.com, and he, on the record, interviewed a gentleman named Dr. Thomas Gill, who was a longtime team physician of both the Red Sox and the Patriots. And he goes into some great detail about when the Red Sox were signing Pedro Martinez without an MRI and how scary it was. And he ultimately turned out to be right in terms of the rotator cuff injury that shortened Pedro Martinez's career ultimately with the Mets. And it's just a scary proposition. I just know when talking to people around the league that because it's the type of injury we're talking about with the hip and Tua, that in this year, unfortunately for him, it's a big concern. And again, we're not talking about a knee, an ankle, an Achilles, something that's predictable. So I would be surprised if anybody would certainly trade up for Tua. And candidly, guys, I wouldn't be shocked if Justin Herbert went before Tua because of the uniqueness of this year.
Yeah, Mike T, here, just to follow up on that. I mean, and you were in Miami. I mean, you're the GM of the Dolphins. How much, and this may sound like a silly question, but I would imagine there's some Miami Dolphins fans that still feel a way about this. You know, is there any pressure because of what happened with Drew Brees and that whole situation where they didn't clear him medically and he's gone on to have the kind of career he had in New Orleans?
Yeah, you know, it's a fair question. That cast, you know, a huge shadow over the franchise. Even when I was there, you know, from a standpoint of, you know, that was one of the worst, you know, medical evaluations on record in terms of Coach Saban couldn't sign him at the time. And we obviously know what has gone on with Drew Brees. So there is a risk of, hey, if we take him, he gets hurt. That's a huge risk. And there's, it's a fair point. There's a risk if you don't, and he turns out to be a great player like Drew Brees. So I think the challenge is, you just don't know what you're going to have for a long period of time. But I would think in this year, because of the weird state of the world, it's hard to take a risk when you just can't get your hands on the player.
Mike T, the NFL has let it be known that they're not going to allow team officials to run the draft from their facilities. Teams are going to have to do it from their homes, whether it's the general manager or head coach or whatever. A lot of the questions that have come up in terms of the overall logistics and communication and potentially facilitating draft day trades. Based on the knowledge that you have on the situation and actually being a former general manager, can you gauge the degree of difficulty on executing a draft day trade under these circumstances?
Yeah, I think it's going to be really hard, Chris. You know, I've done it before. And look, if we're sitting there at 10, we're talking to teams at 8 and 9, maybe try and move up, you know, a spot or two. We're also talking to teams 11 and 12, maybe down to 14, to say, hey, should we slide back or pick or two? And let's just say we're, you know, the Jets, and we want an offensive lineman, and we feel like if we get any one of these three, we'd be happy. I don't know how you can do that virtually. Like, there's so much you can do nowadays, but, you know, there's three of you working the phones at the same time, and then you're taking that information back to your head coach and owner and saying, okay, here are the three options. Do we trade up? Do we trade back? Or do we just stay where we are? And sometimes you have 20 seconds or less to make a decision. And then you have to get the league office on the phone and make sure that if you're making a trade, the trade's not official until the league office has the exact matching phone calls from both teams. So that's a tough one for me. I just don't know. In my mind, I think if we're sitting here the Monday after the draft, I wouldn't be surprised if we have a record small amount of trades, because for that very reason, I just think it's going to be a lot harder to pull it off this year.
Mike, the scenarios that you're discussing, are teams going to have more of those conversations ahead of the draft? Just so as things play out, they could be in better position? Does that happen?
I think so. And one of the best trades I ever made was with Darrelle Revis. And I made that the night before with Marty Herney, who's still the GM of the Panthers, where we said, hey, look, there's going to be one player we want to move up for. If he's there at 14, we're coming up. Here's what we're going to do. And we're not going to try to get that pick for less when you're on the clock. But likewise, if we agree to this, I don't want to have you hold us up for more when you're on the clock. And we had a great relationship, and we had a good faith understanding of what was going on. So I think you're going to see a lot more of that, but you have to have a lot of trust, because you don't have a sense of like, okay, if we're going up for two at three, and we agree the night before with Detroit that we're giving up two ones and a two, whatever it is, that all of a sudden that turns into two ones and two twos or something like that. So you can do those things and have handshakes to say like, hey, this is what we're going to do, but my gosh, you know, you just don't want to have the worm turn at the last second.
Mike Tannenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. We've heard rumblings that there could be four quarterbacks taken in the top 10. Do you think so? Do you think Tua goes? Do you think Herbert, I know you think, goes, and do you think Love as well goes, all of them, and Burrow in the top 10?
I don't see Jordan Love going in the top 10. I just don't. I don't believe it, and I could be proven wrong, but I'd really be surprised. You know, just given his body of work, given the regression this year, and I've heard people say, well, you know, it's a new head coach, it's a new coordinator. Well, guess what? Like, there's going to be new head coaches and new coordinators in the NFL, and there's still an expectation of production. And there's things about Jordan Love I like. I like his height. I like his athleticism. I like his arm strength, but I think he's at least a year away. And because of that, at the end of the day, Dave, I don't see him being a top 10 pick. I mean, let's go back a year ago. There were a lot of questions about Daniel Jones, and candidly, there still are. And he played a lot of football. He played a ton of football at Duke. And, you know, you could argue that maybe he was overdrafted. I just don't know, based on what film this year we could sit here in good conscience and say that guy's a top 10 pick.
Yeah, you'd have to go back to his film from the year before. Hey, man, he does. Well, you know, watching some of his games, watching some of his film, I mean, I would understand it if a team did it. I mean, there are some things he does as far as different arm angles, his ability to escape the pocket and make throws down the field. He does kind of a little bit resemble Pat Mahomes, a little bit. So I could see a team falling in love with that. Mike T, I've heard John Harbaugh suggest that maybe he would be concerned that someone could hack into their system. They're trying to do this, go through this draft, which, I mean, if a team did that, they should, I mean, the punishment would be astronomical. But for you, if you were in this situation now, you're at your house, who for you would be essential to have a successful draft? I mean, what's the, how long is the list of people that you would need to have a successful draft?
Yeah, not much. You want your head coach, your owner, and probably your trainer. Because once the board's set, and one of the most proud things I always said about running a draft is when you turn in that card, it is an organizational effort, and you want to make sure those people are recognized and feel, you know, validated. It was nice to see Joe Douglas give credit to the IT department at the Jets the other day. There was an article about how he was handling things, and that's, you know, I think a great example of what leadership is, you know, acknowledging other people, and you feel great about your security department, your IT department, medical. So all those people contributed. But to answer your question, on the exact moment of the draft, you really need very, very few people. It's just the mechanics of the trades that I struggle with, because when you're sitting in that chair and you have to make a decision, you really need all your information in real time to say, all right, fellas, here's what we need to do and here's why. Does anybody disagree? And those things change literally minute by minute because other teams' needs and their strategy changes as well. And it's this giant chess match. So I do think we're just going to see less trades, and I do think you could have a good draft beyond that.
Mike T, I've always felt like three of the hardest positions to find top-end talent in the National Football League are quarterback, offensive tackle, and edge rusher. In this year's draft, you seem like you have a lot of talent with the quarterback position and the offensive tackle position at the top end, but not so much with the edge rusher. Who's a name that a lot of people aren't hearing that could potentially be called on the first night of the draft that's in that edge rush category?
Yeah, I like this guy, Uche, out of Michigan, and I'm not sure if he'll go in the first night, but certainly in the second or third round. He's a little undersized for Michigan, but he's a good pass rusher. He had a good week in Mobile, good motor, good leverage, good initial quickness. I don't know if he's a three-down player, but to answer your question, Chris, he does have the ability to rush the passer.
Mike Tannenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. We go round and round, a lot of questions. All right, here's the next one for me. It seems like there's a consensus of the top four offensive linemen in this draft. Can you do me a favor and put them in your order from one through four?
Yeah. To me, it's Andrew Thomas for sure. I like him a lot. He really reminds me a lot, guys, of the Brickashaw Ferguson. He's long. He's smooth. I think there's very little holes in his game. I know some people question his motor a little bit just in terms of, you know, I wouldn't say he's not the classic finisher in terms of, you know, driving people off the ball. And we all wish we saw more of that, but candidly, that's just not the way our game's being played anymore. But I just don't see any holes in his game. So I would start with him. Jedrick Wills is probably next for me. I like him a lot. He played right tackle at Alabama. What's interesting about that is that's really a left tackle because, you know, Tua was left-handed. So I think he has really good functional athleticism, good athlete, and should be a really good pro. The next one is probably Mekhi Becton. And I'm deviating a little bit from I want to ignore the workout, but when someone's 364 pounds and runs 5'1", like, that is unbelievably freakish. So, you know, I've seen a comparison, Jason Peters. That probably makes sense, but the guy's 364, and then the next one for me would be Tristan Wirfs. He's a good athlete from the University of Iowa. I wish he had a little bit more tenacity to his game. I wish he finished a little bit better, but I think he has guard, tackle, flexibility, and I think he'll have a good pro career as well.
All right, so Mike T, let me put you in Joe Douglas' seat. So you have the 11th overall pick. You just gave me your list of offensive tackles. So let's just say, for the sake of this question, Thomas is off the board, Wills is off the board, and Becton is off the board. So you're just sitting there with Wirfs. He's your fourth-rated offensive tackle. You need a wide receiver. because it is so hard to find an offensive tackle. I mean, you got Sam Darnold. Do you take the tackle, or do you take your top rated wide receiver in that spot?
I think for this year, the way I would answer that is I would take the tackle. I would also, if I was the Jets, look a little closer at those defensive ends to either Chasen from LSU or maybe Espinenza from Iowa, because I think pass rush is another area that they could use. But if you're saying offensive tackle receiver, I would definitely take the tackle. There's so many intriguing receivers this year. And candidly, I think that's why Robbie Anderson saw his market go down. And it's something we've talked about. You know, the supply and demand of the receiver position this year is historically deep in the college ranks.
Mike T, that being said, who's the best of this year's receivers class, in your opinion?
Oh, Henry Ruggs for me. Let's go back to the Super Bowl, Chris. Tyreek Hill made the one or two plays in the game that separated the 49ers and the Chiefs from being champions. And when you look at Ruggs, I see a very similar guy, very similar style. His speed is explosive. He's a football player that has world-class speed. He's not a track athlete, and he plays that way. So I'm really excited about seeing him at the next level. I love Judy. CeeDee Lamb is a really interesting guy for me because when you watch him play, he plays really physically. But when you see him on up close, he is like thin, and like it's shocking how physical he is given the way he looks. So I give him a ton of credit. But for me, I go Ruggs, Judy, and then him.
Is there any chance in your mind that Chase Young slips to four in the Giants?
Zero.
One, I mean, I'm trying to ask questions to Mike. I wanted to see if he thought there was any chance of that happening.
Dave, what is that scene from, you know, Dumb and Dumber? You know, so you're saying there is a chance? No, there is no chance.
No okay. Shot.
Let me file that away so I can not be disappointed on April 23rd.
I will buy Rick DiPietro's chai latte from Starbucks for the next 5 years every Tuesday, regardless of where I am on this planet, if Chase Young is there at four.
I don't know what would be better, Mike T. That happening, because, I mean, a delicious chai tea latte in 5 years, especially a venti. I would die for, I would kill for that. I don't know if that would be better because I would get the free latte, or if that's some reason the Giants drafted Derek Brown with the fourth overall pick. Any chance that happens?
Oh.
Yeah, I do. Derek.
Well, why would you not move back if you're going to take Derek Brown?
Well, I think that's fair. I mean, if you can get Derek Brown in a three, absolutely. I think the other X factor for them, and I know everyone's talked about, you know, it's been since Carl Banks, since they've drafted a linebacker, but someone's going to have to tell me why Isaiah Simmons is a bad idea. Isaiah Simmons is, to me, the answer of Tyreek Hill and Deebo Samuel. The guy can blitz, he can cover. I think he's a special guy. He's high character. He, to me, checks every box. So if we're talking about what's best for the Giants, someone's going to have to convince me why Isaiah Simmons would be a bad alternative.
Mike T, I know everybody's saying Isaiah Simmons is this ultimate chess piece on the defensive side of the ball, but where does Isaiah Simmons fit in a base defense in the NFL?
Boy, that's a great question. I don't even know if we play base defense anymore because we play 65% in sub because so many teams line up in three receivers.
Yeah, so, I get that part of it, Mike T, but you still got about 30% where you're going to be in base defense. So when you're talking about drafting a linebacker in the first round, you're not going to take that guy off the field ever. So he's going to have to play base. I'm asking you, in your opinion, where does he fit?
Yeah, I think we answered that question in real life. We took Micah Fitzpatrick at 11, and he lined up at safety. So if I had to answer the question, certainly at safety. But I'll tell you this, you know, if a receiver, you know, came out of the backfield on motion and, you know, you could flex him out or he could have a running back 40 yards down the field. So I line him up, you know, I send him to the safety room. I line him up at free safety, but I move him all around. And the other thing, too, like when you're assessing players for the draft, guys, when you look at his versatility, I don't ever have to talk to him. I don't ever have to ask a coach. I never have to give him a Wonderlic test. Isaiah Simmons is really smart. There is no way you could ask him to do what he did at Clemson at that high level of a program and for them to play as well as they did unless he has incredible football acumen. I mean, it's really – he probably doesn't get the credit he deserves when you put the tape, his football acumen, and his ability in terms of – I don't see a hole in his game or how you can just draft him and say, like, boy, I'm really glad he's on our team.
So you see him as a safety?
initially, but again, he could line up and look. If we're playing the Giants, he could go run with Saquon Barkley. He could cover a tight end. He can blitz. I would line him up at safety. But that versatility, that three down value, I think, you know, you think about guys like Troy Polamalu and guys that have really changed the game. I think he's in that discussion. And more importantly, when you look at the players he has to defend, he can match up athletically, and those guys are so hard to find. And again, going back to Micah Fitzpatrick, when we drafted him, his versatility we felt was like a real strength and very, very hard to find.
All right, Rick, I know you like to get your last question in, and we do have to run with Mike. Do you have a final question to throw his way?
Yeah, final one for me. Mike T, you know, not having the ability to, you know, to see a bunch of these guys down at their pro days, do you think now, because of the current situations and you being a GM kind of locked in your house, just going over tape and you know, not really relying on, you know, other factors, do you think that's to a GM's benefit or to his detriment?
Well, that's a good question. I think what we're going to see this year is, in my opinion, much more conservative drafting. And what I mean by that is I think we're going to see tons of players from the SEC, the Big Ten, the Pac-12, the Power Five schools where they're established programs. And I think it's going to be harder for the smaller school players to work their way up. And I think this is a year you're going to see a lot more singles and doubles. And you're going to see people buy, you know, the J&J stock and IBM and not, you know, these tech startups because you just don't have enough information on them.
All right, Mike. Good stuff as always. Stay safe, stay healthy, and we will talk to you next Tuesday.
Yeah, absolutely. And Rick, I'm giving you exactly 7 days to match my offer, so I'm giving you 5 years of Starbucks drinks if Chase Young's at four. I would like to know what the corresponding bet is from your end.
Well, I think I'm on board with you. I think Chase Young goes at two. I mean, that's just, Dave's just wishful thinking.
I'm asking the question that people want to have answered.
And Mike T, you already know. I mean, I don't care how many years it is whenever you want a soy chai tea latte, because God forbid you get gassy, it's going to be there for you. I'm going to take care of my guy.
Well, I appreciate that. And maybe we could figure out some other, you know, wagers between the Jets and the Giants. But look, we'd love to see Chase Young as a Giant. I just, you know, we keep talking about Gettleman moving back. I mean, shouldn't the discussion mean, like, what is it going to take for, you know, them to go up from 4-2?
Let's not get crazy.
Come on. What, the Giants going to start mortgaging the future? They could have done that by losing that stupid game down the stretch to the Redskins.
Great point.
Yeah.
Great point.
I got a lot of them. All right, Mike, we appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right.
Take care. That is, listen, I got a lot of good points. What do you want me to do?
What are the chances Chase Young is there at four?
I had to ask.
Oh, my goodness.
All right.
Daniel Jones won the game after the five touchdowns.
Thank God. Thank God for that. Because four touchdowns wouldn't have been enough. He got the five and really hammered him. All right. There were two things that Mike Tenenbaum said which I thought were very, very interesting and kind of spits in the face of what we've been saying for the past couple of weeks. So let's take a quick break. Come back. Get into that. Baseball as well, 800-919-3776. But Tenenbaum said two things that I thought were very interesting.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg, weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.